This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines, the genocide in the Gaza Strip continues unabated. The Palestine Football Association calls on FIFA to impose sanctions against Israeli teams over the genocide in Gaza. And Israeli forces kill 9 Palestinians across the occupied West Bank in 24 hours. Hello and welcome, everybody. We're 5 months into the Israeli genocidal war on Gaza. The regime's relentless bombardment and shelling continue to claim innocent lives in the besieged Palestinian territory. Over 100 Gazans have lost their lives in Israeli strikes since Wednesday. Several areas, including Jabalia in the north and Rafah in the south, have come under fresh shelling and aerial strikes. The death toll from the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza since October the 7th is now closer to 32,000, most of them women and children. Meanwhile, the Israeli army has also warned the displaced people in Al-Shifa Hospital to leave the complex immediately. Palestinian media reported that the military also blew up a building used as a critical care unit there. Israeli forces attacked the hospital at the weekend, killing and injuring a number of people while it continued with the siege on the compound. On Wednesday, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas released a footage showing its fighters repelling an Israeli attack near Al-Shifa. The video shows resistance fighters targeting invading troops and a tank with rockets and hand grenades. On this segment of the program, the World Health Organization says it has documented 410 Israeli attacks on Gaza's healthcare sector since the regime launched its genocidal war in early October. According to WHO, such attacks left over 680 people dead and hundreds more injured until March 12th. It said that the Israeli strikes damaged or destroyed nearly 100 healthcare facilities and about a similar number of ambulances across Gaza. It added that two-fifths of Israeli attacks took place in Gaza City, a quarter of them in North Gaza, and another quarter in the southern city of Khan Yunis. The World Health Organization emphasized that the healthcare sector should not be a target in armed conflicts. It urged the Israeli regime to respect international law. Well, joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have Sarah Wilkinson, human rights activist, joining us from Midlands, UK. Also, we have board member of Africa for Palestine, Mr. Farid Issaq, joining us from Johannesburg. Welcome to the program to the both of you. Let's start off with Ms. Wilkinson. What do you make of the numbers released by the World Health Organization? 410 Israeli attacks on Gaza's health sector since the regime launched this genocidal war, and the attacks on the health sector and health facilities in the Gaza Strip does constitute a war crime and is in contravention of rules of armed conflict, of international armed conflict, isn't it?
Absolutely, it is. I mean, targeting hospitals, targeting ambulances, killing paramedics, surgeons, doctors, medical students. I mean, it's absolutely heinous, and the world outrage is probably should be epic at the moment, but is actually probably is quite lame. You know, the hitting of hospitals of wounded, of people that have been executed, who haven't been able to leave their beds because of their injuries, is absolutely outrageous. It's one of the worst things to happen, I think, in modern history. And the fact that the Israelis are now openly doing it in broad daylight, they're admitting to the targeting of, they admitted to the massacre of 150 individuals in the Al-Shifa compound. Normally it would have taken them months to have made a statement. Now they're just coming clean and saying, yeah, we acknowledge that we executed, and among the executed were paramedics, patients that were wounded and couldn't flee the bullets. 150 executed, another 50, I think, the next day. You know, it's absolutely outrageous. And, you know, I just don't hear public outrage enough. I don't hear the silence from the international community. That in itself is another war crime. The attacks on the health sector, as we know, is a stage of genocide where you are disabling the Palestinians the rights to be able to heal themselves, to get treatment, to seek treatment, and to be treated adequately so that those wounds don't become infected. You know, basically, it's a death sentence, it's a secondary death sentence, knowing that there are not enough medical staff to treat people any longer, to administer particular drugs that are needed. And we now hear from an Israeli newspaper that they're evicting Palestinian cancer patients, including many, many children, who are being treated in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. They're evicting them into Gaza, knowing that they will not be able to get the right treatment. So that this genocide has multiple layers of it and multiple violations of humanitarian law, multiple violations on a grand scale. And yet the silence from the international community is absolutely deafening.
Right. Mr. Faridisak in Johannesburg, I want to get your thoughts on what the Israelis have been doing with regards to the targeting of the health sector and the health facilities in the Gaza Strip. Not only have the Israelis not listened to the recommendations of the International Court of Justice to allow aid in and to stop this genocide from going further, they're laying siege on hospitals like the Al-Shifa Hospital for days. And as our guest in the UK mentioned, they're evicting cancer patients and killing immobile patients and doctors. So the list just goes on and on of war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide. And yet the international community still, it remains silent. Why is that?
In large part, the international community is quiet because there is a broader political indifference to the suffering of the Palestinians. So that's the one issue. The second issue is that the political powers internationally are still invested in an old narrative, and that is that the lives of indigenous people don't count. And if they do count, they only count insofar as they are needed by the controlling powers. And so the tragedy about all of this is not just the deaths that are occurring, the starvation, the famine stages that this genocide had reached. It's not only that, but it is the first genocide in history that the intention to commit these crimes are actually announced before the time. And so it's not as if the world doesn't know, even if it's not just a question of seeing the deaths and the starvation and the attacks on medical facilities and hospitals after the event. The worst crime is that the Israeli regime, they announce what they are doing. They take selfies of the soldiers doing this, and it is just one huge kind of celebration of this death, the malnutrition, the starvation that the Palestinians are undergoing. And so it isn't just incidental, it is part of the psyche that goes along with that you want to eliminate because you think you are the chosen people. Well, if you are the chosen people, then the others simply have to be wiped off the face of the earth. And so this is part of a larger project, and unfortunately, because of the military-industrial complex, the greater powers in the world who dominate international policy be to go along with the genocide on the one hand, and on the other hand, pretend that they are in support of different humanitarian solutions to the crisis.
We're going to wrap up this segment of the program here. Thanks to board member of Africa for Palestine, Mr. Fayed Issack, joining us from Johannesburg, and thanks to human rights activist Sarah Wilkinson, speaking to us from Midlands, UK. With that, brings us to an end here on this edition of News Review. Moving on, Washington has taken a U-turn after vetoing three Gaza ceasefire resolutions at the UN Security Council. The U.S. Secretary of State, who's on a trip to West Asia, says his country has circulated a new draft resolution in this regard. Antony Blinken, speaking to the media, said the resolution calls for, quote, an immediate ceasefire linked to the release of hostages in the Gaza Strip. He also expressed hope that all council members will support the U.S. move and that it would send a strong message. Blinken made the revelation on Wednesday evening during a visit to Saudi Arabia to discuss the Israeli genocide war against Palestinians. This is Blinken's sixth visit to the region since the war began. The United States, Israel's main backer, had previously used its veto to block the three resolutions on the Gaza ceasefire. The Palestine Football Association has called on football's international governing body, FIFA, to impose sanctions against Israeli teams over the regime's genocide in Gaza. The Palestinian Association said six other member nations have endorsed its proposal, asking FIFA to put it on the agenda of its upcoming Congress in May. It added that the regime's onslaught has killed nearly 100 football players and destroyed or seriously damaged the entire football infrastructure in Gaza in clear violation of international law. The Palestinian officials said at least five football clubs based in Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank are members of the regime's football association. They said such inclusion implicitly recognizes Israel's sovereignty over the settlements, which goes against international law and FIFA's obligations. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq has announced a new operation against an Israeli target in solidarity with the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip. The Iraqi resistance said its latest operation targeted a power plant in Tel Aviv in the occupied Palestinian territories using drones. A group said anti-Israeli operations will continue in support of Palestinians in Gaza and in response to the Israeli massacres of innocent civilians. The new attack came just a day after Iraq's Islamic Resistance hit Israel's Ben Gurion airport with drones for the second time. The Iraqi resistance has carried out a series of attacks against the Israeli targets in the occupied territories in recent months. It has also attacked U.S. military bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria in retaliation for Washington's role in the Israeli genocide in Gaza. We're now joined by Secretary General of the Palestine Foundation in Pakistan, Mr. Sabir Abu Maryam, who's speaking to us from Karachi. Mr. Abu Maryam, welcome to the program. Give us your thoughts on the continued anti-Israeli and anti-U.S. interest operations and retaliatory attacks that are taking place by the Islamic resistance in Iraq. What message is this sending to the Israelis and to the United States and its allies?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to talk about the Iraqi resistance, because in the region, and especially in scenario of the war of Gaza and the genocide by the Zionist regime of Israel in the Palestine, the role of Iraqi resistance movements is a very important role across the board. As we know that very well, the people of Iraq has a long historical relations between the Palestinian solidarity and the Palestinian people. And the Iraqi people has sacrificed their lives, their all valuable things for the sake of cause of Palestine in past history. The history is very clear for us. But now Iraq has been changed after a few years has later. We witnessed that America was in the Iraq and Saddam was ruling the Iraq, and Iraq was losing this kind of solidarity with Palestine. But now Iraqi people and Iraqi resistance is reviewing, and they are reviewing their historical relation with the people of Palestine, with the cause of Palestine. This is the first. The second thing, as we are witnessing and we are observing that Lebanon and Syria, they are existing in the border of occupied Palestine. But Iraq and Yemen, they are little bit far, especially Yemen is so far. But the both of them, Yemen and Iraq, they are clearly standing with the people of Palestine, with the cause of Palestine, through their resistance, through their arms, through their sacrifices, and especially the Islamic resistance in Iraq. As in the second phase of resistance activities, first they had stopped ships in the Mediterranean Sea, and now in the second phase they are continuously attacking in the Tel Aviv, also in Tel Aviv, and also the Ben Gurion Airport. It is the clear message, not only for Zionist regime, not only for illegitimate Israel, but this is the special message. This is a very strong and special message to the government of the United States, which is the most criminal, which is the most biased, which is the most inhuman government in the world, and which is the supporting systematic and organized genocide of Gaza with Israel. So this is the message to US. If you will not leave the land of Iraq, the holy land of Iraq, the same punishment will be for you, for America. And in nearly past, the Islamic resistance of Iraq already targeted the US bases in Iraq. And yes, the main target and the main objective of these activities, especially the activities against the Zionist regime, is that first America should leave Iraq. The all forces must evacuate Iraq, and the second, in the top priority, to stop the genocide in Gaza, to stop the aggression in Gaza. If you will not stop, if you will not halt, it means the message is very clear from Iraqi resistance that these kind of activities, these kind of response shall be continued, and there will be no peace for Israel.
Right.
If there is no mercy for Gaza, there is no peace for Palestine. So Israel and the Zionists and the settlers, they must know there is no peace for settlers in the occupied Palestine.
Thanks a lot, sir. Secretary General of the Palestine Foundation, Pakistan, Sabir Abu Mariam, joining us from Karachi. And with that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Bye for now.
Congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who celebrates the ancient festivity of Nowruz. Congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who celebrates the ancient festivity of Nowruz. congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who celebrates the ancient festivity of Nowruz. Congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who celebrates the ancient festivity of Nowruz. Congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who celebrates the ancient festivity of Nowruz. Congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who celebrates the ancient festivity.
Hidden Files.
One 100 years ago, wars were fought with tanks, rifles, machine guns, chemical weapons, explosive devices, etc. Well, fast forward, and wars have gotten much more sophisticated. And at times, the most lethal weapon is intangible. From misinformation, media campaigns to sanctions, the tools of war have changed to target nations and to cause upheaval from within first, and then add the more common hardware tools to the chest, like WMDs, IEDs, phosphorus bombs and missiles, and, you know, great technological advancement like those. Just as there are alleged rules to traditional warfare that are not followed, so are there alleged rules to this new form of warfare. Not targeting civilian populations, and not inflicting collective punishment, and not committing crimes against humanity. These are all nice concepts, which are not always followed. Hello and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi, and today we will look at a form of war which many do not understand the effects of, sanctions, and especially the unilateral sanctions regime of the United States. According to the United Nations, sanctions are meant to be used as a last resort. It says it is a response to stopping extremism, curbing smuggling, and massive human rights violations. However, what has been the norm of the UN is that countries which are members of the Security Council are not sanctioned, and the sanction of others depends on the political and geostrategic interests of Security Council members. Well, the main sanction regime today comes from the United States and its unilateral sanctions. Washington sanctions a country and pressures other countries from dealing with the targeted sanctioned country, usually by economic threats or even worse. According to the United Nations, a proliferation of secondary sanctions has resulted in a growing fear of sanctions and overcompliance, leading to serious adverse effects on the human rights of millions of people around the world. Secondary sanctions are intended to prevent third parties, states, commercial entities, and individuals from trading with countries that are subject to sanctions issued by another country. We will talk about the legality of these unilateral sanctions a little bit later in this show.
Currently, a third of the world's population is affected by U.S. sanctions. Since 1990, the U.S. has imposed unilateral sanctions in over 20 countries. Countries that try to have independent policies from the United States are the most affected. Countries like Cuba, which has been on the U.S. sanctioned list for 61 years now. Iran, which was the most sanctioned country in history until the start of the Russia-Ukraine war. Iran has been on the U.S. sanctions list for 43 years. And now, Russia is the most sanctioned country in the world. Then there is Venezuela, which has suffered for years from U.S. sanctions due to its revolutionary policies. According to the Center for Economic and Policy Research, 40,000 Venezuelans have died due to U.S. sanctions.
I'd like to welcome our first guest to the show.
Cindy Sheehan. Cindy Sheehan is a peace and social justice advocate who became internationally prominent after her son Casey was killed in Iraq in 2004. She set up a peace camp near then-President George Bush's vacation home in Crawford, Texas. She is an author and hosts The Soapbox on Substack.
Well, thanks so much for being with us, Cindy. I'd like to hear your opinion on the way sanctions have been used to cause maximum pressure on countries and their populations.
Sanctions are supposedly put in place because the United States, the State Department, the politicians, the media, you know, whatever, this big class of propagandists, they'll say that so-and-so is killing his own people, so-and-so is a brutal dictatorship, blah, blah, blah. And so the United States, they're, you know, and Cuba is a perfect example of this. There's been a blockade in Cuba almost as long as I have been alive. And they're supposedly placed there so the people will get so disadvantaged and so upset with their own governments that they'll rise up against their governments. But as you know, a victim living in a place where there's been really harsh sanctions, that's not exactly what happens. And it actually is harmful to the people. And I believe, and I've talked to many people in the countries that you mentioned, and I've been to Cuba many times, it makes them stronger to stay firm against the empire, against imperialism, against neoliberalism.
Well, the irony of these U.S. sanctions is that the American people actually don't benefit from what their country is doing to others. So who's benefiting from this, Cindy?
The war profiteers, the globalists, the capitalists, they're the ones that profit. But we've seen here in the United States that even though it was a slow march to the collapse of our economic system here in the United States, especially since 2011, we've seen since the start of COVID, we've seen since the brutal sanctions put against Russia this year, that it is actually now starting to reflect here in the United States with gas prices and inflation, hyperinflation, the reduction of services, the crumbling of our infrastructure. So these sanctions are coming home to roost.
And any final comments that you have, Cindy, on this issue?
Many people are starting to wake up to that fact. And so while corporate media is collapsing, we're seeing the rise of alternative media and a rise of truth seekers. So there's still hope. And it's like talking person to person. I'm here in California at 8 o'clock in the morning. You're in Iran 10 and a half hours away from me. And we know, just like exposing the truth from real humans, real workers, real people who are experiencing, you know, the good and the bad and how we can work together for peace and for economic security and environmental sustainability for the entire world.
Oh, thank you so much, Cindy Sheehan, for being with us right here on Hidden Files.
One of the main messages broadcast about people, such as those living in Afghanistan, Venezuela, and Iran, is that they are suffering. We watch corporate media pump out story after story of the suffering of these people living in non-U.S. ally countries and tell how their pain, unlike that of people in Western countries, is the doing of violent criminals ruling their country without popular support. The part the media often entirely skips, however, is the role of the West in causing these issues. A role that can almost be summarized in a single word: sanctions. Sanctions are also known as unilateral coercive economic measures, which means that they are ways for, say, the U.S. to coerce governments of sovereign nations to give in to their demands. The U.S. has the power to do this because the petrodollar system, gives the U.S. dollar elevated status as the dominant currency in the global economy. And due to its dominance, it can also punish other governments if they continue to do business with the targets of these coercive measures. In this way, American officials aim to either make the government of the target country obey them or make its people so desperate that they'll overthrow their government in hopes of improving their situation. And the U.S. has used this form of economic warfare since the 1950s on a host of different nations like North Korea, Cuba, Iran, Syria, Venezuela, and others. Some of the toughest of all sanctions have been imposed on Iran, and politicians like Rudy Giuliani have openly said they are working because they make the people suffer. The biggest victims of this economic terrorism are people with rare diseases who cannot access essential medicines because of these sanctions and often die as a result.
Well, let me welcome our next guest to Hidden Files.
Alfred Maurice de Zayas. De Zayas is an expert for civil and political rights and has published 9 books on a variety of legal and historical issues. He has been visiting professor of law at numerous universities, including the University of British Columbia in Canada, the Graduate Institute of the University of Geneva, the DePaul University Law School in Chicago, the Human Rights Institute at the Irish National University, Galway, and the University of Trier, Germany. At present, he teaches international law at the Geneva School of Diplomacy.
Oh, welcome to the program, Mr. de Zayas. Let's start off with your perspective on unilateral coercive measures, otherwise known as sanctions.
What must be clear to every listener is that sanctions kill. I mean, sanctions kill just as much as a bullet. Sanctions kill when you siege a town, like the Nazis siege Leningrad. That cost between 700 and 1 million human lives. Now, the sanctions that the United States has imposed on Venezuela are estimated to have cost, in the year 2018 alone, 40,000 deaths. Now, when you add all the deaths attributable to unilateral coercive measures against Cuba, against Nicaragua, against Venezuela, against Syria, against Iran, you're going to go into the hundreds of thousands of deaths. And this is not an exaggeration. UNICEF carried out an investigation of sanctions against Iraq back in the 1990s, and the estimate is that 500,000 children died because of the sanctions.
Wow, unbelievable. I mean, you say that sanctions are killing people. Can there be international legal measures taken against these sanctions?
In the light of worldwide deaths, certainly of more than 100,000 human beings directly attributable to United Nations sanctions, this is a matter for Karim Khan, the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court. This clearly falls under Article 7 of the Statute of Rome, the Statute of the International Criminal Court. That is the article on crimes against humanity. This is what has to be argued in the General Assembly. This is what has to be argued in the Security Council. This is what has to be argued at DESA and all other United Nations agencies. We already have the excellent reports of Alena Dohan. She is the UN Special Rapporteur on the adverse impacts of sanctions, not only U.S. sanctions, also sanctions imposed by the United Kingdom and by Canada and by France and Germany, et cetera, et cetera. They all kill. And that is so important that the mainstream media pick up on this piece of news. As I say, my American friends know nothing about this. They know nothing about the fact that sanctions kill. They assume that sanctions are there for good reasons to persuade governments to cease violating human rights. So the hypocrisy of it, the, shall we say, the cynicism of it is mind-boggling. But that is the situation we are living in. So my appeal, which I make in my book, Building a Just World Order, is that this issue be before the International Criminal Court. But in the meantime, it can also go up to the International Court of Justice, because the General Assembly, if you get enough votes in the General Assembly, so majority plus one, you can adopt the resolution elevating the question, the legal question of the illegality of unilateral coercive measures under the UN Charter, and elevate it to the International Court of Justice for an advisory opinion.
Well, what do you think the overall goal is for Washington and its sanctions regime?
Our government, there is what we term the deep state. And the deep state is made up of the military, industrial, digital, financial complex. Essentially, they call the shots. And they're making money. They're making plenty of money with war. They're certainly making a lot of money with the Ukraine war. And they're certainly making a lot of money with the sanctions. So the sanctions is a way, for instance, to prevent countries to do free trade and to buy cheaper where they can in the world. What sanctions have done, and people don't seem to realize it, sanctions have upturned, frustrated, subverted the benefits of globalization. Sanctions have essentially destroyed globalization and the supply chains and everything that goes with it. So that the United States, by weaponizing the dollar, is trying to impose on the rest of the world the U.S. imperial wishes. And as I said, I'm an American citizen, but I think like Noam Chomsky or like Jeffrey Sachs or like Dan Kovalik or Francis Boyle or Stephen Kinzer, who just abhor the weaponization of human rights actually to hurt people. And that exactly is what we're doing, but that with the complicity of the mainstream media, New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, CNN, Fox, and the others.
What can be done to counter these measures?
Until we realize that we are being lied to day in, day out, and that we are, in the United States, in Canada, in the United Kingdom, in France, in Germany, in Switzerland, we won't be able to make any progress. So what can we do? Certainly give it publicity in the General Assembly, certainly give it publicity in the Security Council, appeal to UNICEF to carry out an investigation of the deaths attributable to sanctions, appeal to the WHO to carry out an investigation of deaths attributable to lack of access to medicine. Similarly, an appeal to the Food and Agriculture Organization, and then elevate the issue to the International Court of Justice. Is this a crime against humanity? Does this amount to a violation of Article 7 of the Statute of Rome? I have no hesitation to say that it does.
Well, do you think that these unilateral sanctions help to create an alliance between those countries which have been sanctioned?
The mindset in Washington is still the mindset of the unipolar world. And the United States just simply is striking right and left and imposing sanctions and intimidating countries and actually engaging in terror against governments, and has an enormous responsibility, both civil responsibility and criminal responsibility, for the consequences of those sanctions. But there again, that is what I say, and what Richard Falk says, and what Jeffrey Sachs says. But that is not what you're going to read in the New York Times and in the Washington Post. And thus far, I don't see the American media changing. I see the American media as the spokesperson, as the sounding board of the Pentagon and the sounding board of the State Department. So don't expect any level of self-criticism inside the established media. You can read very good analysis in the so-called alternative media.
Are there any final comments you have on this, Mr. DeZayas?
You will see that there's plenty of Americans who think like I do. On the other hand, none of us is in a position of power. None of us is in a position that we can actually influence policy. And we can write our articles and write our analysis and hope that some people who are in a position of power will say, that makes sense. Why not try that? Why not shift? Why not try a different paradigm than the unipolar paradigm that we now have?
Well, thank you so much for being with us right here on Hidden Files, Mr. Alfred DeZayas. As many countries continue to be affected by the sanctions regime, there's growing solidarity between many of the targeted countries and increased cooperation between them. These nations have had to be resilient and had to count on their own ingenuity to survive and, for many others, even thrive during these sanctions. And now it appears that the pendulum of global power is swinging and it is heading towards the east. This should be a very interesting journey, and Hidden Files will keep you informed during this process. Well, it has been a pleasure being with you on this episode of Hidden Files, and hopefully you will join us next week. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye for now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Q. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Brothers, sisters, listeners. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And welcome to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. We are still discussing the moral support that we need to give to our brothers and sisters in faith. Amongst the branches of moral support towards our brothers and sisters is that we need to avoid associating ourselves with their enemies and being friends with their friends. And this is just basic knowledge. This is basic formula 1 + 1 = 2. It's not brain surgery or rocket science, as we say. Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he says, لا تتخذن عدو صديقك صديقا. Do not take the enemy of your friend's enemy. You might say, but I have nothing against this person. Yes, maybe you don't have anything against him. Your friend does. In order not to upset your friend, you can avoid that person. And then he says, فتعادي صديقك. If you take him as a friend, what would happen is your friend might become your enemy. He will say to you, oh, so now you went with him? We're no longer brothers. We're no longer friends. I mean, obviously, I know what you're saying in your mind. You're saying, but what if my friend is wrong and the other guy is really good, is really nice? Maybe my friend is the one that crossed him over. Well, in this case, you need to fix it up. And then Amir al-Mu'minin salamullah alayhi says, أصدقاؤك ثلاثة وأعداؤك ثلاثة. Your friends are three and so are your enemies. فأصدقاؤك صديقك. As for your friends, the first one is your friend. وصديق صديقك. And the friend of your friend. وعدو عدوك. And the enemy of your enemy. These are three. وأعداؤك ثلاثة. And your enemies are also three. عدوك, your enemy, he is number one. وعدو صديقك. And the enemy of your friend should be your enemy. And three, وصديق عدوك. And the friend of your enemy. So then Amir al-Mu'minin salamullah alayhi, he says when it comes to your friends, their enemies need to be your enemies. Their friends need to be your friends. That's just basic knowledge. And that's how we can keep, maintain, and strengthen our relationship with our brothers. In Ziyarat Ashura, we say, Inni silmun liman salamakum. I am at peace with whoever is at peace with you. Wa aduun liman adakum, and an enemy to your enemies. Now, I can't make such a statement and read that ziyara of Ashura every single day when I am shaking hands with the devil and I live in the system of the devil, when I am happy with whatever the devil is doing. And when I say devil, I mean the Western powers. So the Imam says, know who your friends and who your enemies are. Let us take a short break and then we will come back.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتیح الجنان است چه فرون دماغ و سواب داره فرون روزون
One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اون اینه که فروندرخکاری اینجا کم ثواب داره دعا هم داره ثواب هم داره.
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام اونطوری که اینو گفته بودم گفته دی اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. Amongst the branches of moral support for our brothers and sisters in faith is keeping their secrets. Sometimes this becomes an obligation rather than a recommendation. Keeping someone's secret, it's not something I should give myself the choice to keep or not to keep. If you are entrusted with a secret, then it is a trust. A trust means an amana. Al-amana means al-mu'minun li-amanatihim hafidhun. When it comes to their trust, they keep them. Amir al-mu'minin alayhi salam says, فَإِذَا كُنْتَ مِنْ أَخِيكَ عَلَى حَدِّ الثِّقَةِ. I mean, Amir al-mu'minin salamullah alayhi, sometimes my mind just freezes. He says, if you have a brother to the status of you and him being like trustworthy towards one another. Now, this sentence itself, I need 2 hours to explain it. When it comes to brothers, not any brother I can trust. Do you guys feel me? There are specific ones that you can trust. He says, if you find one of your brothers amongst them that you can trust and he can trust you, فَبْذُلْ لَهُ مَالَكَ. If you find that one that you can trust, then give him your wealth. وَبَدَنَكَ. Give him your body, meaning your powers. وَصَافِ مَنْ صَافَهُ. And be friends with his friends. وَعَادِي مَنْ عَادَهُ. And be an enemy with his enemy. وَكْتُمْ سِرَّهُ. And this is when it comes to keeping secrets. That brother that you can trust, and he trusts you, you must keep his secret. وَظْهِرْ مِنْهُ الْحَسَنُ. And whatever is good about this brother, bring it out to public. So the Imam saying, when it comes to secret, you have to keep it. You have to do your best not to expose that person. What kind of a brother would you be when you betray me and you go tell someone else and tell them, I'm going to tell you something, but do not tell anyone. I mean, you have already betrayed me. So the Amir alayhi salam, he says, when if you find the brother, if you give him your wealth and if you give him your body, you give him whatever you have, it is worth it. When he comes and he leaves his secrets with you, you are meant to keep his secrets. And Amir al-Mu'mineen, he himself says, Sirruka damuk, your secrets are your blood. فَلَا تِفْشِيهِ إِلَّا فِي عُرُوقِكَ. Do not let your blood move anywhere else besides your veins. Because we do know that if the blood is not in the vein, then you're dying. Because it needs to be in the vein. So therefore the vein is cut, and the person is gone. Amir al-Mu'minin says, the secrets of your brothers, the ones that trust you and you trust them, it is as vital as that. We will continue in other episodes. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Seeking peace, seeking
This is